This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky.
Annie Laurie Gaylor, a third-generation freethinker, and I'm an out-of-the-closet atheist. I guess you could also call me a polytheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, a rationalist who believes in none of the above. And this is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. You know, I used to be a preacher, evangelical minister. So here's the question. Does that make me a first-generation atheist? When in fact my mom and dad later both became atheists. So wouldn't, if they're both, if my mom and dad are atheists, doesn't that make me technically a second generation atheist?
I vote
now?
For second generation, and we have a third generation atheist daughter.
Yeah, or fourth in your case.
I mean, fourth, yes. Fourth in my case.
So even though my mom and dad raised me religious, we all saw the light, and so did my brother Daryl, and we rejected religious dogma and superstition. Free Thought Radio, this show, is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Annie Laurie and I co-direct the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're a 501c3 educational charity with two purposes. We started in 1978 as a national group to educate the public about non-theism and to safeguard the constitutional wall of separation between state and church in the United States. Today is the weekend of July the 9th, 2011.
FFRF is the nation's largest explicitly atheist agnostic organization. We call it Free Thought, that's the umbrella, with more than 16,500 members nationwide. And we educate, we litigate, and we broadcast. And we hope someday you will join us. That you'll join us. And it's really easy. You just go to fffrf.org. And membership includes 10 issues of a very lively 24-page newspaper, Free Thought Today, reporting on what we do with your money and also acquainting members with each other. And it is edited by Bill Dunn, formerly with the Capital Times. Our broadcast is originating in Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio is airing at Atlanta, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Monterey, New York City for early risers out there, and podcasting. And Bill Dusenberry, who works with the Tulsa chapter, asked me to let people know about a digital radio where you are allowed to grab anything that streams and listen to it at your leisure. So you might want to look into that.
Later on today's show, we're going to talk with Michael Shermer. He's a monthly columnist for Scientific American, the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine. We're going to talk about his brand new book. It's called The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths.
On the first half of Free Thought Radio, we'll have our usual news updates about FFRF actions and the sorry state of the separation between church and state.
Let's talk for a few minutes about a unique event in Alabama, where there is what is called a Free Thought Advance, not a retreat. Annie Laurie and I just returned from the Independence Day weekend at Lake Hypatia, Alabama, where our chapter, the Alabama Freethought Association, and its director, Patricia Cleveland, hosted its annual July 4th event, held largely in the Freedom From Religion Foundation's second Freethought Hall in the Piney Woods near Talladega, Alabama. Almost 130 participants from the South and all over the nation, and actually one person from Denmark showed up at that event.
And we heard from you, Dan, a very nice concert at the piano, and as well as a great Tunes and Tunes show where you teamed up with your comrade in arms or whatever, former Mormon.
Partner in crime.
Former Mormon turned atheist, Steve Benson, who's an award-winning cartoonist, editorial cartoonist for the Arizona Republic, and they are unfortunately a dying breed out there with all the problems in journalism. But Some of the participants at Lake Hypatia left with these very clever caricatures, also drawn by Steve, and for donations to FFRF. And we'll have some photos from that event and coverage in our newspaper and at our website. You go under Outreach to find Lake Hypatia.
And Steve and I put on our TNT, Tunes and Tunes show, which are my musical tunes and his editorial cartoons. On the 10th anniversary of the show, we debuted there on the July 4th weekend in 2001. And now we are working on what we're calling an evergreen version of the show, because every show changes. It has to be timely. And people want to have something, they want to be able to buy it and take it home, but we can't because everyone's different. So we are now working on, and we tried out before that audience last week, an evergreen version that we think will hold up over time. We also heard at that event from Southern Freethought activists, Mark Zumbach, who heads our active, very active Raleigh chapter, and Bill Dusenberry, who got our Tulsa chapter started. We heard from Brian Birchall, who has started Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. Betty McCollum talked about women and religion. And Jim McCollum, who aired the PBS documentary, The Lord Was Not on Trial, here today. In fact, we talked with the director, Jay Rosenstein, on a previous show. And
Jim was at the heart of the McCollum versus Board of Education lawsuit as a young boy who was being picked on in his school in Champaign, Illinois, because he didn't participate in illegal religious instruction in the public schools. And so his mother decided to make a federal case out of it. And actually, that's a joke. She started in state court, but took it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. She knew she was right, even though she was losing at the other levels, and achieved a monumental decision safeguarding the rights of school children to be free from religion in public schools.
And it's a great story. And Jim McCollum, who's retired now, he represented that historic 1948 challenge. But also at our July 4th event, on hand was 15-year-old Duncan Henderson, who we recently talked to on Freethought Radio. He talked about his difficulty in forming a Freethought club at his middle school in Auburn, Alabama.
And that was a lot of fun, having Duncan and his younger brother on hand. And when we pulled out our check for a student activist award of $1,000 for Duncan, not only did Duncan gasp, but most of the audience, but we do want to reward activism for separation of church and state and free thought. There are so many scholarships out there for rewarding obedience to religion, and we want to do something for the activists who are free thinkers. And so we'd like to play, for those of you who couldn't be there, a short clip from the Nick News segment that aired on Nickelodeon a couple of months ago.
And this is
Linda Ellerbee's news show, and this is Duncan Henderson.
For some kids, the freedom to believe has become truly personal. For example, kids who are atheists risk persecution, although they have the right not to believe in a God.
I was kind of young when we stopped going to church. I was kind of like, I really don't believe any of this. My name is Duncan. I live in Auburn, Alabama, and I'm an atheist. An atheist is someone who doesn't believe in a God or creator. It's hard to be an atheist, because most people around here, the first question out of their mouth is, what church do you go to? This fall, I tried to form a free-thinking group at our school, just so the guys who don't believe in religion can hang out and talk.
The first thing that happened was Duncan and his friends found a teacher that seemed very excited about, say, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I'd love to sponsor your group. And then that teacher went and talked to the principal. The end result was that she called me and said, I'm very uncomfortable after talking to the principal. And we both told her, if you have any fears at all that this might, you know, be a job security issue, back out. I mean, this is not worth that. And she did. My name is Greg, and I'm Duncan's dad. I followed up with the principal, so I asked him, why? What was the problem? He said, I don't think you'll find a sponsor for this club on our campus.
We hadn't found anybody interested in helping us since. Our group doesn't want anything different than any Christian group at our school has. So why can't I have this group?
Duncan and his friends, they've done all that they can. And the next step is that we have to take legal action.
I think if there's a free-thinking or atheist group in our school, I think more kids who are atheists will probably open up and say, oh, well, now that there's a group, I'll try and join in. I think that's exactly what the principal's scared of. But I know in the end, it's going to be something that's really going to turn out to be good for the whole community and school.
This is complicated stuff, and at the same time, it's really very simple. You live in a country where it's perfectly all right for you to look at others just as I'm looking at you right now and say, what I believe or don't believe is my business. And that is the American way. I'm Linda Ellerbe. Goodbye for Nick News.
And so you, in addition to Duncan, you heard Gregory Henderson, his father, and Gregory is an FFRF member and an IT expert who saved the day for Toons and Tunes, didn't he?
Yeah, we had trouble opening the file and he came up and he figured out what to do. We'll be right back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And Free Thought Radio will be back to talk more about the controversy over our out-of-the-closet billboards in Columbus, Ohio, where a statement, I can be good without God, or I'm good without God, was too hot for a local church. And then we'll talk with the author and skeptic, Michael Shermer.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
We have skeptical author Michael Shermer coming up next, and now we're continuing with a little more news.
Today is, this show is broadcasting on July the 9th, and we do like to note birth dates of notable freethinkers, and we haven't had a lot of time to do that lately, but take note. July the 9th, 1933 was the birthday of Oliver Sacks. So he turned 78 this weekend. Oliver Sacks is the author, the scientist, the doctor, who's written all these wonderful books. He describes himself as an old Jewish atheist and is an honorary member on the honorary board.
An honorary director.
Of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Also,
he'll be 78.
78.
Right?
He's 78 this weekend. Also in 1942, on July the 13th, Harrison Ford was born. So what does that make him? 69, I guess. And he's a free thinker, and we have him up at our website at Free Thought of the Day for July 13th. And I just noticed in an AARP magazine this month, Harrison Ford was asked by the interviewer, what is the most important thing in life? And he replied, people and work. And he hesitated for a minute, and then he said, and learning. So there you go, very free thinking, very rationalist type of comment. So many happy returns to both of them. Last week, we interviewed the very appealing college student, Dylan Gallos, about how he felt when his billboard, which is one of seven that the Freedom From Religion Foundation put up in Columbus, Ohio, when it had to be removed or moved to another location after a church complained that it didn't like what it said. Dylan's out-of-the-closet billboard said, I can be good without God.
And we have some coverage from the Columbus Channel 10 local CBS News.
Some billboards are turning heads in Columbus, but one has been removed at the request of a local church. New at 6, 10 TV's Josh Poland explains why an atheist group launched an ad campaign along Columbus roadways.
Columbus commuters near East Main Street and Alum Creek Drive are told they can be good without God. It's an ad campaign designed to put a face on atheism and dispel myths that non-believers are bad people.
And I looked up the campaign and a little more about it and decided to go for it.
Dylan Gallos is featured on the East Main Street billboard. His billboard originally was near Stelter Road and Allegheny Avenue, property belonging to Christ Cathedral Church.
We didn't know anything about the locations until probably maybe a week or two before they went up. I was surprised, to be honest. I went there and it was next to a church.
The billboard apparently caught church leaders by surprise as well. The church had the sign removed. Christ Cathedral Church could not be reached for comment, but Gallo says he was disappointed by their decision.
I don't see why our campaign was so particularly offensive, but the billboard was on their property, so it was within their rights.
The billboard is one of seven the Freedom From Religion Foundation has placed around the Columbus metro area, including this one here on West Fifth Avenue.
Each features a different face and viewpoint, just like the nearby residents who see them every day.
I don't really think, you know, anybody needs to push anything on anybody, but it is America. It is freedom of speech.
It's their beliefs. You know, you have yours, I have mine. Let's all just get along.
Getting along may be easier now that the Dylan Gallos billboard and message have found a new home. Josh Poland, 10TV News.
As Josh mentioned there, the pastor of Christ Cathedral couldn't be reached for comment because he was out of town. The billboards will remain in place, though, through mid-July.
And if you want to be on a billboard, you don't have to wait. You can participate in the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Out of the Closet campaign. We've created a very unique app at our website where in about 1 minute you can put yourself on a virtual billboard with your face, your statement of non-belief, and you can choose a description of yourself, out of the closet, atheist, agnostic, etc. And we'll approve your message and post it at our website, and then you will get a permalink to it, which you can post wherever you want. You can put it on your Facebook page. You can show all your friends about it, that you are on a billboard. Just go to do this, go to our website, ffrf.org/out. And the homepage there also has a lot of ads and links for what we are calling our cyberboard campaign.
Now, we reported last week that FFRF has complained about Texas Governor Rick Perry calling for an August 6th prayer convocation to be held at a Houston stadium. And as we previously reported, he has a letter up inviting people to participate, and he said that the hope for heaven the hope for America lies in heaven. We will find it on our knees. Now, this is a video that he has posted. He's ignored our request to not participate. Now he's posted a new video. Let's listen.
This is Governor Rick Perry, and I'm inviting you to join your fellow Americans in a day of prayer and fasting on behalf of our nation. As an elected leader, I'm all too aware of government's limitations when it comes to fixing things that are spiritual in nature. That's where prayer comes in, and we need it more than ever. With the economy in trouble, communities in crisis, and people adrift in a sea of moral relativism, we need God's help. That's why I'm calling on Americans to pray and fast like Jesus did, and as God called the Israelites to do in the book of Joel. I sincerely hope you'll join me in Houston on August the 6th and take your place in Reliance Stadium with praying people, asking God's forgiveness, His wisdom and provision for our state and nation. To learn more, visit theresponseusa.com. Then make plans to be part of something even bigger than Texas.
I think Rick Perry should ask forgiveness of Americans for trying to unite church and state. And where is that sea of moral relativism? I wonder where on our map do we find that?
Prayer really is an abandonment of leadership. If you don't know what to do, then you pray.
Beware of prayer by pious politicians.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. And we'll be right back after the break to talk with the esteemed skeptic Michael Shermer about his brand new book, The Believing Brain, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. So stay tuned.
I'm Mark Zimbach from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I believe in the separation of church and state.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney. In my new play, Letting Go of God, I come out clearly as an atheist, absolutely committed to keeping church and state separate. Won't you join me and the Freedom From Religion Foundation in waking up America to the growing dangers of theocracy? Phone 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. That's ffrf.org.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, and we're back. Most listeners to the show know who Michael Shermer is. But for those three of you who don't, those three of you who were abducted by aliens and have been living somewhere else for the last 10 years, let me tell you who Michael Shermer is. He's the author of numerous books, including Why People Believe Weird Things, The Science of Good and Evil, and eight other books on the evolution of human beliefs and conduct. He's the founding publisher of Skeptic magazine. He's the editor of Skeptic.com. He's a monthly columnist for Scientific American. In fact, his column is the first thing I read every month when I get my issue in the mail. He's also an adjunct professor at Claremont Graduate University. He lives in Southern California. His new book is called The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Michael.
Hi, glad to be back.
The last time I saw you was at in the chapel at California Lutheran University, where you gave this great talk with the PowerPoint, and you turned around and you saw all these pipes from the pipe organ, and you said, "Whoa, what is that?" You remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it always makes me a little nervous to be back in church, you know, because you never know.
What church did you were you brought up in?
I wasn't brought up in any religion. My parents were not religious or anti-religious, but in high school, my peer group got into the whole Jesus born-again movement in the early 1970s, and that was the kind of the start of the evangelical movement. We didn't even call ourselves evangelical, but that's what we were. The whole point was to evangelize. If you're not evangelizing to other people, then you're not an evangelical. And we weren't affiliated with any church at all. In fact, the whole point was to not be affiliated with a church, because we recognized the dogmatic nature of religion and that it was to go back to, like a one-on-one relationship with Jesus and just read the Bible and all that. And when I went to Pepperdine, that was affiliated with the Church of Christ, so I guess loosely speaking, that would be my religion, although none of us thought of ourselves as affiliated with the Church of Christ, which is a pretty conservative religion. When I was at Pepperdine, there was no dancing allowed on campus. We weren't even allowed to go in the girls' dorms. If you wanted to date somebody, you had to like meet him in the ping pong room or something, you know, like that. So it was pretty conservative. We had President Gerald Ford came to speak there, and Edward Teller came and gave his mutual assured destruction speech, promoting the development of nuclear weapons and all that. So, I'm well steeped in the conservative Christian worldview. I know exactly how they feel and think.
So just
so
like
I was there.
You were just like me. I was in Southern California at the same time as an evangelical preacher. And I think from what you say, just like me, you really did believe. You weren't just going through the motions. Did you have those feelings and the faith and the peace and the confidence of belief?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's when you're in that world, as you know, it's an internally coherent and logical and consistent and emotionally satisfying bubble to be in. And, you know, when I was at Pepperdine, you are protected there from the outside world to a certain extent, and that's what it's like to be in a religion or a small town where everyone's the same religion. It's like being on a college dorm. But when I went to graduate school at Cal State Fullerton, I was studying experimental psychology. There was no bubble at all, no protective bubble, and there was no there wasn't an anti-religious movement at all. There was no atheist movement or anything remotely like that. No one really cared. It just wasn't important. It wasn't really part of the whole scene. So
just learning.
There it became okay to doubt.
And so what started you on your doubting process?
Well, several things. Studying comparative world religions and mythology and And I took some courses in anthropology and social psychology. And there you really see the social nature, social construction of beliefs clearly, you know. And that's what social scientists do for a living. We study what causes people to believe and think and act as they do. And you can see that there's no monopoly on truth, that these things are all socially constructed, and that people in different cultures believe just as strongly as I did that they were right, but they were clearly thinking something different than I was. So instead of thinking, well, I must be right and they must be wrong, I started to think, well, I wonder if there is no absolute truth like this, and that maybe, you know, maybe religions are just completely made up. And there are no gods, that we make them up. And that started me down the road, and it became okay to doubt. I took this course, I write about this in The Believing Brain, I took this course in evolutionary biology on Tuesday nights from 7 to 10 from Bayard Bradstrom. And so first of all, I was sort of a creationist because I thought you were supposed to be. Not that they taught that at Pepperdine, they didn't, but I thought you were supposed to be. So I kind of inculcated that into my worldview.
Because the Bible says it. The Bible says it, so it has to be true.
Yeah, well, I just kind of assumed it because it was sort of part of the worldview of being an evangelical.
Yeah.
But then I realized that there's an actual science to it. I mean, I didn't know anything about it, really, I discovered by taking the class. And then the class met afterwards from 10 o'clock till, you know, closing time at this local bar. And that's where we discussed all the great, issues in life, you know, free will and determinism and God and religion and science and religion and all that. And so at some point, I just felt I was being hypocritical, wearing my little ichthus fish that my girlfriend had given me, and I took it off, you know, just one day, just looking at it in the mirror. This is back when men wore chains, gold chains. It was pretty obnoxious, but I just realized, you know, I'm really hypocritical wearing this thing, so I took it off, and that was pretty much the end of it.
Well, so your new book, The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truth, is going to be sort of an explanation of your own experience, right?
Yeah, I have a chapter in there. The first three chapters of the book are narrative stories of belief. My own is the third one. Francis Collins is the second one. And the first chapter opens with a guy named Chick Darpino, who no one will have heard of. But he had a remarkable experience early one morning that changed his life. And so I use that as a starting off point to show the power of beliefs, that the brain constructs these amazing belief systems, sometimes by accident, by stress or whatever, in which we concoct sense presences or beings or angels or aliens or demons or gods or God or whatever, and then we believe it because it's such a powerful experience. And I talk about,
Well, you talk about patterns and...
Oh, John Nash, the genius behind game theory, and how he was also a schizophrenic, and how finding patterns in nature is what our brains do by nature is what they're evolved to do. And that for some people, like John Nash, as he says, that, you know, there was no difference in his mind between believing in aliens and believing in mathematical relationships and games for which he won the Nobel Prize, that it was all seemed like the same source. So what I'm arguing is that the patterns we find, there's no natural way to discriminate between true and false patterns. We're not good at that. And that's what science does. That's why we need science so much, because our brains are so easy to be fooled.
So, and you say that the brain tends to assume personal agency in nature. Is that right?
Right.
You know, like,
so,
if there's thunder, then that must be Thor.
Exactly right. So we project into the patterns that we think we find intentional agency or essence or a being or a dualistic sense of there being corporeal and incorporeal, brain and mind, body and soul. There's something else. So I talk about the interesting research on that, would you wear Hitler's sweater or jacket? You know, most people say, ooh, no, you know, it must have a sense of evil about it. Or would you wear Mr. Rogers' cardigan sweater? People go, oh, yeah, that would be nice. As if there's an essence of goodness or evilness in the clothing itself. Or you know, what would you pay for Brad Pitt's sweater? So this experiment put Brad Pitt's sweater actually on sale on eBay, for sale on eBay, washed or unwashed. And the unwashed the unwashed one got, you know, much a higher price than the washed one, as if the essence of Brad Pittness is in the clothing.
Well, there might be some DNA in the sweat or something, right?
Well, in fact, there probably is, or at least a sense of smell. And I talk about the perhaps evolved nature of this, that our sense that there is an essence to something may have an evolutionary basis in that, like, the emotions of disgust are related to disease contaminants and, you know, bodily excrements and things like that are disease-carrying, and that we do feel disgust about those things.
Yeah.
And on the positive side, people will describe the scent of their lovers or the scent of their clothing and that sort of thing that is a real turn-on. Well, that has an evolutionary basis to it. There's certain smells that are really good that we like. And so that may then get transferred into an incorporeal essence. Like people that get an organ donation often feel like the personality of the organ donor came with the heart or the liver or the kidney, yeah. And that they start taking on those characteristics. I heard one yesterday of a vegetarian who claimed that when he got a new heart, that he, or it was a she, I think, she got a new heart, she suddenly desired hamburgers and steaks. And the guy who gave her the heart, you know, he was a big barbecue guy, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Well, she might have just been anemic after that heart transplant.
Secretly desire hamburgers and steaks because they're anemic, yeah.
Well, now, before we go for the break, which we need to do in a minute, you are saying there's a connection between dopamine and belief. And I guess the question would be, does this suggest that belief can become addictive? And therefore, it's physically unpleasant to doubt what you're trained to believe.
Yeah, exactly. So it's easier to believe than not believe. You get rewarded through dopamine and in the reward centers of the brain when you make a connection, when you learn something, especially something that, you know, is like a pleasant, nice belief. We get a little hit of dopamine. Research shows that to doubt something takes more cognitive processing power and time, and it's associated in areas of the brain that are associated with disgust and negative emotions. So it's hard to be a skeptic. Even for me, like, I'm a professional skeptic, and even for me, I find it uncomfortable, unpleasant to challenge people's beliefs. I don't like doing it. It's hard to do it. It's hard to challenge my own beliefs, especially like on the global warming thing. I really struggled with that for years, and, you know, finally came around. But it wasn't a pleasant thing. It was like, oh man, I have to change my beliefs. I really don't want to do that.
So there's
it's hard to do that. It's unpleasant to do it.
An actual biological or chemical basis, then, when people's beliefs are challenged, they're going to actually feel different in a physical way then.
Yep, that's right. They do.
Wow.
In the brain. And then it's made even worse if your social circle reinforces the belief and offers punishment, moralistic punishment against you changing your beliefs. So people that are starting to grow up or live in a small town and everybody they know is religious and goes to the same church, you know, well, what are you supposed to do with that doubt? You know, if your whole family goes to church and all your friends and, you know, gosh, the music is fun, the food is good, it's free parking. You know, it's hard to give that up. It's unpleasant.
Well, it's interesting. Right? Bertrand Russell used to say that if something someone says, you know, an idea you have, not a suggestion of action, but just a point of view that differs from yours makes you angry, maybe that's a sign that you really have doubt, and your explanation would explain our crank mail, too.
That we get from
people.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
Well, we're going to come back. We're going to take a break here, and we'll come back, and I want to talk about your, I think it's a new concept of yours, belief-dependent realism, after the break. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're talking with Michael Shermer, the skeptic. His new book is called The Believing Brain. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Marty from Ackworth, Georgia, and thank goodness for the FFRF and Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're continuing our conversation with Michael Shermer, whose newest book, it just came out this year, is called The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truth. Now, Michael, we've read many of your previous books in which you attack these issues from many different angles, but in this book, you seem to be pulling it all together in one place, and it is not just God and religion, but it's your political biases and conspiracies and all that. And you've come up with, I think, this new concept called belief-dependent realism, which I recognize it seems to echo the Hawking's Mlodinow's idea of model-dependent realism. Can you explain what is belief-dependent realism?
Yep, it is inspired by Hawking, and there they argue that the model you use in physics determines the actual reality that you think you perceive, you know, like the double slit experiment, that sort of thing. Well, I expand that idea to all beliefs, that everything we believe is based on some kind of a model or belief system or paradigm or worldview or idea or hypothesis or theory or whatever you want to call it that's in our brains. You can't get beyond that. The only hope we have of extricating ourselves from that sort of existential trap of there being no reality is that, in fact, there is a reality, and science is the best tool we have to get around it. Now, it's not that scientists are any different than anybody else. They're not special. They're not more objective than politicians or economic ideologues or religious people. It's just that the system itself has built into it self-correcting machinery that says if you don't look out for your biases that determine reality, somebody else will. So, like, I have a whole chapter on all the cognitive biases, like the confirmation bias, where you look for and find confirming evidence for what you already believe, and you ignore the disconfirming evidence, or the hindsight bias. After an event happens, you can reconstruct the causal sequence that led to it, but it's hard to predict before. And, you know, there's dozens of these cognitive biases that all together shape and determine what our beliefs are as truths. So does that mean it's all just relative and there is no truth? No, I don't go that far. I mean, that's the trap that belief-dependent realism sets, and I offer an escape through science, that at least we have that self-correcting mechanism now. Sometimes I've been a little discouraged of late, like that paper that was published in the Journal of Social Personality and Social Psychology by Daryl Bem, that purported to show ESP is real and backward time travel is possible. And Richard Wiseman and two of his colleagues tried to replicate the experiment, and they got null results, and they sent that paper to the journal, and they refused to publish it. They said, we don't publish negative findings. We don't publish, what did they say? We don't publish replications of studies that come out negative.
What?
So I am going to really nail these guys for this in Scientific American, because that goes against the very grain of what science stands for.
Yeah.
That you can't just get away with some outlandish, extraordinary claim for which your evidence is not extraordinary, and then other scientists try to replicate it and can't, and then the journal says, well, we're not going to publish it. Whoa, hang on for a minute here. This is what sets us apart from religion and everything else, is that we're claiming we have some system here that usually works.
Because a negative result is just as useful or informational as a positive one.
Absolutely. I see this as a problem in medicine, too, medical research, drug research. You know, negative findings are not always published, but in fact, those are probably some of the most important ones. You have drug A that you claim does X, but, you know, what if it doesn't? That's equally important to know.
It does something else you don't want it to do.
Yeah, exactly. Even worse, right, side effects. So, now, usually those things come out in the long run, but
after people have died,
it came out in the short run. So it's not perfect, but it's the best system we have.
Now, to go back to the beginning of your book, you do have a chapter tracing the faith or whatever development of Francis Collins, and perhaps like me, you were shocked if you went to the Darwin exhibit at the Natural History Museum in New York and you saw they felt that the need to put this permanent video up of Francis Collins, who's now heading the National Department of Health, talking about how he believes in God. And so you trace, we have 2 minutes left, it's not very much time, but can you sort of analyze what's going on with Francis Collins?
Well, I put Collins in my book because in chapter one, I have that story of that guy, Chick Darpino, my friend who had that weird experience. But he's just a bricklayer who educated himself to try to understand why this thing happened to him, this weird hallucinogenic experience he had early one morning that he interpreted as being real. And so any reader would go, oh, yeah, but this is an uneducated bricklayer. This wouldn't happen to me. So I then have in chapter two Francis Collins, who is more educated and smarter than most people, and yet he had this sort of revelatory experience of finding God and accepting Christ and all that. So if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody. So
a the point of that story is the frozen waterfall, wasn't it?
Yeah, the frozen waterfall, right. So the point of that story is that it doesn't matter how smart you are or how educated you are. All that's irrelevant, really, to beliefs. If anything, smart, educated people like Collins are even better at rationalizing their non-smart beliefs. That is, beliefs they arrived at for non-smart reasons, which is to say most of our beliefs, our economic ideologies, our political preferences, our social attitudes, and especially our religious choices, those have very little to do with data, evidence, arguments. All that stuff comes after the fact, no different than conservatives or liberals who filter their information they get through their certain channels and then reinforce them as truths. It's all beliefs on top of beliefs.
So people can maybe help inoculate themselves against getting credulous by reading your book, The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael Shermer.
Oh, you're welcome.
We also want to thank Brian Tarani, who, like Michael Shermer, is a cyclist. Brian Tarani is our producer and our engineer here in Madison, Wisconsin, where our show is produced, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio. to hear all these past shows and to sign up for the podcast.
Ask for more info at ffrf.org. You can also phone 1-800-335-4021. A great issue of Free Thought Today has just come out, the June-July issue, and it's chock full of information and inspiring, if I may say that word, stories about free thinkers and what we can do to keep state and church separate. So request a sample copy at ffrf.org and tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join me.